Good afternoon, and thank you to the organizers from Cantor. This is our third year in a row that we have been here, and we appreciate the hospitality. These are the regular forward-looking statements. So cisplatin as a drug has been probably the number one chemotherapy used worldwide. It's mainly used in non-small cell lung cancer, in ovarian tumors, head and neck tumors. But in the early 80s, pediatric oncologists decided to experiment with it and develop various disease regimens, which showed actually very, very high response rates across various solid tumors in pediatrics. The biggest issue that these physicians, if you speak today to a pediatric oncologist, that they face with the use of cisplatin for these tumor types is that you could see from the pictures on the right, there's a child with a hearing aid and another one with a cochlear implant. And that's a permanent, irreversible hearing loss that these kids experience. They see it very, very frequently. And I would say since we've been involved in this company in the last decade, and particularly as they pushed the cure rates that are now well in excess of 80% in many of these tumor types. So unlike adult cancer, you have very, very high survival. There's been a real push to monitor the quality of life of these kids. And obviously the survival here comes at a cost, and the cost being the irreversible hearing loss. We are we're based out of North Carolina. We're working on a drug by the name of PEDMARK, which is a unique formulation of sodium thiosulfate for the prevention of this platinum-induced hearing loss. We have a 7.5 years exclusivity, which is basically a pediatric orphan drug designation, as well as we qualify for a pediatric use marketing authorization in Europe, which would give us 10 years of exclusivity. We have been working in the last decade with two cooperative groups that study cancer, various agents in pediatric cancer. The first one is Children Oncology Group. We have a phase 3 study from them, ACCL-0431, which enrolled 131 patients in highly heterogeneous solid tumors. That study achieved its primary efficacy endpoint for the prevention of hearing loss, and those results were reported initially at ASCO and then published at Lancet Oncology in December of 2016. We also have a second study, the pivotal study, which is SIAP-06. The SIAP group, which is the international pediatric organization that it's really the liver subgroup under SIAP, that enrolled 109 patients with a disease, with liver tumor in primarily very, very young children. The disease is called standard risk hepatoblastoma. That study, just like the COG study, also achieved its primary efficacy endpoint on the prevention of the hearing loss. Those results were reported in SIAP of 2017. Importantly, the study showed no evidence of tumor protection, which is actually quite important to how this drug would be used going forward. And the results were also published in New England Journal of Medicine of June of last year. We have been granted a fast track and a breakthrough therapy designations by the FDA. We have also received a positive opinion in Europe by the pediatric on our pediatric investigational plan. And it's really, it's a subgroup under EMA called the Pediatric Committee, PDCO. We have initiated a rolling submission with the on our NDA with the FDA that began last December. We hope to complete the submission early next year. What we're targeting is PEDMARK will be proposed to be indicated for the prevention of ototoxicity induced by cisplatin chemotherapy in patients 1 month of age or older, but not above 18 years. And those are patients with localized non-metastatic solid tumors. What's been particularly exciting and as well as personally rewarding is to see a very small group of dedicated professionals work for over a decade here on this project. As PEDMARK would be the first drug ever that we have in the label of prevention of hearing loss. Again, this is a massive, massive accomplishment for all the physicians and our consultants and our small team. So a bit on platinum hearing loss and what these physicians face. So many times we hear the story where a audiologist reaches out to a pediatric oncologist and says, you know, you need to dose reduce the cisplatin dose. The child is becoming deaf. And this could happen as quickly as actually the second or third dose of cisplatin as they're treating these kids. Those kids, they also lose, the hearing loss is represented really in the high frequency area where they cannot hear consonants. And as you know, the English language has quite many of them. The other issue is that their ability to hear background noise, it's really problematic in very young children and infants in particular, as they're in the process of acquiring language skills. As you could imagine, they have difficulty developing if they don't acquire properly language skill. But it's also a massive issue in the older kids where they've already established themselves in their social setting with their family, with their friends, and then all of a sudden they're withdrawn from that because they can no longer understand or comprehend what the person next to them is saying to them. So what we see with those kids is that they become isolated, depressed, some of them suicidal, unfortunately. But basically what we see with cisplatin use in general is that roughly 60% of these children experience this irreversible hearing loss, and I think it's pretty clear that this is quite devastating for the long-term impact for the surviving ones. So I'm on slide 7, and you can see here to the right, so what they did is a study that a disease by the name of neuroblastoma, which occurs typically before the age of 5. And these are long-term survivors from neuroblastoma that were treated with cisplatin. And they wanted to see, the authors of the study wanted to see how these kids were performing relative to their peers in grade 3, grade 6, and grade 9. And you could see by the time these kids reach grade 9, roughly half of them are held back at least 1 year, which speaks to the poor quality of life and in general their academic achievement. Two important aspects to this. One is the cumulative cisplatin dose. So the more cisplatin a child gets, the greater the hearing loss. So if the treatment is actually quite heavy on cumulative cisplatin, these kids get hearing loss right away. The other one is age. So what's interesting to us is that, and we actually see it through some of our data as well, is that the ones that are, you know, 15 and under have a lot more hearing loss than the 15 to 20-year-olds. You could see on slide 9, this is the what we believe to be a representative market opportunity for PEDMARK. In the U.S. every year, there are 5,000 newly diagnosed patients that are treated with platinum. Roughly 90% of them will be treated with cisplatin. Amongst those, 30% of them present themselves with newly diagnosed metastatic tumors, and 70% of them present themselves with localized non-metastatic. And once we discuss the clinical data, you'll see why we differentiate the market this way. But what keep in mind is that in metastatic disease, the survival is maybe 50%, and for localized non-metastatic tumors, the survival is quite high, where it's greater than 80%, thus quality of life really matters. And Europe is basically very similar numbers to the U.S. So sodium thiosulfate has been around for a long time. It's a historic compound. It's never had any efficacy, human efficacy or safety data reported, because it's indicated for cyanide poisoning in conjunction with sodium sulfate. The drug delivery of STS is basically IV over 15 minutes. So it's a big bolus dose that these kids are getting. The drug is actually quite safe. The only thing that we see with the use of STS is we see some vomiting given the bolus dose of the 20 grams per meter squared that we treat these kids with. Mechanistically, how we believe the interaction between STS and cisplatin occurs is that they're compartmentalized, they're separated in time and in space. So cisplatin has a very short half-life. Its half-life is roughly 20 to 30 minutes. And STS must be given 6 hours after the cisplatin. So by the time STS enters the body, there's less than 5% of the unbound platinum present. And in the label for cisplatin, unbound platinum is the one that does its anti-cancer activity. So STS basically enters the body very, very quickly. Most of the platinum, 95% plus of the platinum, is basically bound at the time, and it rapidly binds to those platinum complexes and excretes them out. The first study is the COG study, our proof of concept study. So here you could see that the study was designed to answer the question whether or not the addition of STS prevents the hearing loss in a highly heterogeneous population of children. This is as close to a real-life study as one would get. Cisplatin was given per the investigator standard for each tumor type that they were treating with. Audiometry was measured at 4 weeks after they had finished treatment. And the secondary endpoint, the important one being is to monitor event-free survival and overall survival between the two randomized groups. So here you could see the various age groups of these kids, the various tumor types by these kids, and also the extent of the disease. So I'm on slide 13. What you could see from this slide is that the drug works really, really well in the preventing of the hearing loss. So just like the literature of roughly 60% having these kids having hearing loss, this is what this study reported as well. 56% in the observation group had hearing loss versus 29% for STS in a highly statistically significant fashion. The study met its primary endpoint. In addition, they had a protocol predefined subgroup. These are of the young children, the ones under the age of 5, where the hearing loss was 73% versus 21%. Again, highly statistically significant. You could see here on slide 14, this is the secondary endpoints where they follow these patients out 3 years, and this was published in Lancet. There was no difference in event-free survival or overall survival between the two groups. However, about year, the middle of the first year, toward the end of year two, the two curves started separating. So the investigators were wondering why the separation in OS was occurring. So they did a post hoc analysis where they looked at the entire CRF and what the CRF had collected, and tried to correlate that with why the separation of OS was occurring at the end of year two. And what they found is that patients with localized, non-metastatic disease, of course, there was no difference in EFS and OS. However, in patients with metastatic disease, there was a difference, which the author stated warrants caution. Luckily, there is the second study, which is the CYAPEL-6 study that was published in the England Journal of Medicine. And that study, unlike the COG study, really tried to take away a lot of the variabilities from the study, in the sense that it was only studied in one tumor type, which is a standard risk hepatoblastoma. Cisplatin was the only drug used. There were no other drugs, so cisplatin was monotherapy. Importantly, we had only one age group, and they're mainly 13-month-old babies. The other important thing, which is actually very critical to the design of the study, is that patients were randomized up front for risk. So patients with pretext 1, 2, or 3 were stratified up front. And those are patients that have very, very high survival. 90% of them actually live. And the only thing, unfortunately, with the studies, it took a very, very long time to enroll, given the rarity of the disease, as well as we had to wait until the last child, reaches the age of 3.5 to do a proper pure tone audiometry. So overall, this was basically an effort for well over a decade to get to this point. So this is a bit more on the scheme of design. Cisplatin was used as a monotherapy for 4 cycles. Then there was delayed surgery for the child, and then cisplatin was used 2 additional cycles after surgery. And the control arm where SDS was given was at 6 hours after the cisplatin infusion with, again, delayed surgery and then 2 cycles post. Again, just like the COG study, I'm on slide 18, very similar results, albeit with a different grading scale. 63% of these kids had hearing loss, that's the control group, the ones without STS, versus 33% with STS. Again, very clearly, highly statistical p-value, basically STS reduces the risk of hearing loss by half. Slide 19, you could see these are across different grades of hearing loss, where STS, again, does a very, very good job across different grades for the prevention of the hearing loss. The important slide is slide 20. This is where they looked at the event-free survival and overall survival, the secondary endpoints of the study, and there was no difference between the two. Importantly, when it comes to overall survival, STS group had 2 deaths versus the cisplatin group had 4 deaths. So there was no difference between the two. So now that we have the totality of both of these studies, the question around the pediatric community is that, you know, how would this drug be used? I get this question quite a bit. And what we refer them to, anyone curious with this question, is the New England Journal of Medicine editorial, where the physicians who were the investigators in both studies basically presented their thoughts on the totality of the data. So you could see that there is very strong evidence for the prevention of hearing loss for STS, and that both groups say that the drug should find place in patients that have localized solid tumors as well. This was a patient-focused drug development meeting that we attended. This was in September 13th last year, and why that's important is there have been historically about only 12 or 13 of these meetings. We might have been the 13th one. And this is where long-term survivors of cancer, as well as their caregivers, their parents, were there to really educate the public on what it's like to live with hearing loss. And these are, again, the long-term survivors of cancer. Luckily, there were some kids that were there that were treated with STS, and the vast majority, unfortunately, were not. And it was actually a fantastic meeting because it really brought forward, the daily struggles that these kids and their parents go through to make things work in their families. So where we are from a regulatory perspective, I'm on slide 23. We have initiated our NDA submission with the FDA. We should fully complete that early next year. At that time, I think the agency has about up to two months to review the application, and then up to 6 months to basically for us to have a PDUFA date. So what we expect is that if it all goes well, we should have an approval by this time next year. There is actually a concurrent process with that in Europe, which, again, just from a timelines perspective, is probably another 6 months behind the U.S. So this is a bit about our company. We have about 20 million shares outstanding. The company has a heavy institutional ownership and heavily insider-owned. We're sub $100 million company. Our cash is sufficient. We have, as of June 30th, we had $17.5 million. Our burn last year was $8 million. We also have a debt facility in place, which we could draw upon once the drug is approved, which is actually quite advantageous to us, especially given where our stock is. And yeah, as you could see, these investors have been with us for a long time and have been very, very supportive overall to the company. This is a bit about, next slide is on the small team. We recently hired a chief commercial officer, Shub Goel. We're actually very, very pleased to have her on board. She comes with big pharma, small pharma experience of having successfully launched various drugs in adult solid tumors and liquid tumors, and actually has been a great addition to our team. So she's in charge of building a small team around the launch date for PEDMARK. So with that, I'll leave it. Are there any questions? No. Oh, thank you for your time.